This week's parsha is Parshas Maaseh, and we will start from page 930. And at this point in Parshas Maaseh, the Torah has pretty much has been discussing the laws of a person who kills someone else accidentally, and the fact that the person who kills him accidentally has to escape to an Ir Mukhet, to a city of refuge, and that, and the Torah discusses, you know, all the different things involved in that law. And then page 930, Pasuk Lamed, two lines from the bottom. Kol Makei Nefesh, whoever smites a person, which Rashi explains means to mean anyone is coming to basically smite a person who has murdered someone, l'fi Eidim Yirtzach HaSareitzeach, only through witnesses shall the murderer be killed. Ve'eid Echad L'yanda B'nefesh Lamus, and one witness cannot testify against a person for the purpose of putting him to death. So at this point, the Torah is now switching over to a person who has not killed unintentionally. It's a person who has killed intentionally, and anyone who wants to punish him for that cannot do so unless there are two witnesses. One witness cannot testify against the person to put him to death. We continue on page 932, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. V'sikhu chayfer, nor shall you accept any kind of ransom, l'nefesh reitzeach, for the soul of a murderer, asher hu rashu lamus, that he is worthy of being killed. Ki mois yimas, rather he shall surely be put to death. V'sikhu chayfer lamus ele miklatei, and you shall not accept ransom for one who has to flee to a city of refuge. L'shu l'sheves po'aretz, in order to return to live in the land that Meis HaKayin Tov HaKayin dies. V'leisachanifu esaretz, you shall not bring guilt upon the land asher atem ba, that you are on it. Ki adam hu yachanif esaretz, for the blood shall bring guilt upon the earth, upon the land. V'lo aretz lo yechupar, and there shall be no atonement for the land, l'adam asher shupach ba, for the blood that has been spilled in it. Kim medab shevchai, except with the blood of the one who has spilled it. So at this point, the Torah is talking about a person who is a murderer intentionally, not the unintentional murderer, but the intentional murderer. And the Torah is saying quite very, very, very strongly that that person is deserving of death. You cannot get out of, you cannot ransom himself to get out of death. And if we do not fulfill our obligation of putting, or of trying the person the proper way to put him to death for spilling the blood, then we bring guilt upon the land. So this is one of the many examples in the Torah of capital punishment. There are many times the Torah mentions for different sins that there shall be capital punishment. And here, in the case of the murderer, it's really quite lengthy and quite intense about the way that the Torah describes how the person who murders, number one, you have to have two witnesses, not one witness to prove his guilt. But once you prove his guilt, the only way to bring atonement to the land is by spilling his blood, is by punishing him, by putting him to death. So the Torah seems to be very strong and very pro-capital punishment. So what I would like to share with you right now is Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, gave a response in which he explained the Torah's view of capital punishment. He is not specifically focusing on this week's parasha. He's talking about in general capital punishment, but it's very worthwhile to hear how he approached this very hot button topic that we have in contemporary society. And this is found in Igros Moshe, which are the collection of Rav Moshe's responses to the questions that were sent to him. It's in Rav Moshe's responses are divided up amongst the sections of the Shulchan Aruch. And this is in the section Choshen Mishpat. This is the questions that he answered regarding the laws of the section of Choshen Mishpat, which is a section of Shulchan Aruch that deals with monetary law and judicial law. So it seems, he doesn't say who it was, but it seems that some government official asked him about the Torah view on capital punishment. And he gave the following. Ba'ata Ashi Biktara. He says, I'll give a succinct explanation. כי בעצם נאמר בתורה אנשי ניסה לעבירת החמורת מאוד כרציחת נפש אדם. We find that the Torah does give capital punishment to very serious sins like murder, ומיני גנבת אדם, kidnapping, ומיני עריות, and for different types of illicit relationships. ועל אחד שעובר עבודה זרה, שהוא לשמש ולא ירח ולא עץ ולא אבן וכדומה, and to one who is worships idols, or a person who is a pagan worshipper, whether it be to the sun, the moon, to wood, to stone, to images. And here he explains, my understanding is in the next line, he explains whatever falls under, meaning whatever the Torah gives capital punishment for, he now seems to give a explanation or a background to understand why were these sins given capital punishment and others not. But so he lists these different types of sins that the Torah has given this capital punishment to, this all these serious sins: murder, kidnapping, illicit relationships, idol worship. Sha'azhu mufkala says koma shabaliboy mimina nivlais vachzariya shaba'ilem shibnu harashayim atavis atman. My understanding is that when you transgress any one of these sins, and again intentionally, and he will elaborate exactly on later, he will mention later the conditions needed, but a person who commits these sins intentionally is a person who now has basically stepped over the line, in a sense that now it's possible that he'll do anything. He will do any evil that evil people commit for the purpose of their own satisfaction, their own self-gratification. You do none of these sins intentionally, you have now crossed the line. You have now entered into a stage of now you could land up doing anything. You could be doing the worst evils in the world, as evil people shall do for their own self-satisfaction. But then he says, so that's the category. If we're talking about a sin that you can get a capital punishment for, that means that you have now crossed the line into a state in which you would do anything to satisfy yourself. But we're not doing this. Meaning we're not delivering the punishment because of some kind of hatred towards them, or because we fear that the world won't be able, civilization won't be able to exist, the world won't be able to exist if we don't rid the world of such people. Because regarding this, the Gemara Bava Metzia says, Yavai bal ha-terem v'yachala es kaitzav, let the owner of the vineyard come and remove the thorns. Okay, so let's take a little break here now from this, and let me share with you a Gemara in Bava Metzia. Gemara Bava Metzia is on top of Gimel Amud Beis. Very interesting. The Gemara regarding the Belezer Reb Shimon. Okay, so the Gemara says like this: the Belezer Reb Shimon Ashkach Lahu Fahaguna the Katafis Gandhi. The Belezer Reb Shimon met this Jewish man who had an official government job of catching thieves. He was a cop. He was an investigator. He was a G-man. What do you want to call it? But his point was is that his job was to catch thieves. And you'll see from the Gemara that these were Jewish thieves. He said to him, how are you able to figure out who's a thief or not? There's psukim that describe the evil like animals who hide, you know, they work at night. How do you catch them? Okay. He says, Dilma Shakla Sadiqi, the Shavkas Rashid. You know, maybe you're taking into jail, you're taking over, giving over to the government righteous people, and you're leaving over the wicked. What am I supposed to do? Right? I got this job by the government. They gave me this job. And I gotta, you know, I have to show, I have to produce, you know, I gotta produce fees. I gotta catch people somehow. So he said, Ta Agbarach. Okay, I'm gonna teach you. I'm gonna give you the way to figure out who's a thief. Go 4 hours into the marketplace. Okay? 4 hours into the day seems to have been lunchtime, okay? And people are gathering at the market, they're sitting down at the restaurants, and they're eating, and they're drinking. Kichazes inish the kashas hichamra. You see a person drinking wine. The kanaka kasa biyada. He's holding the cup in his hand. The coming on them, and he's dozing off. This guy has been up late. Okay? This is your starting point, he's trying to say. This is a starting point. This is not going to be enough to go ahead. And I'm not saying this is enough to go ahead and pull him in and say, okay, this means you're a ganav. But let's say it's at least a starting point. Okay? Now, shorimuya, ask about him. If he's a Torah scholar and he's dozing off, that means he got up already in the middle of the night to learn. All right, don't bother him. Let's say he's some kind of a laborer. Okay, it means he's gotten up very early to work. Now people say, oh, he works at night. Who works at night? The dude they love it. Nah. Maybe he's some kind of a person, as Rashi explains, this is a person who like made pins, right? And it seems that at night, and making these pins, he used to make certain noises, but at night, it didn't make as much noise. Then it's possible, if people tell you he's a night laborer, okay, you could assume that he's a night laborer, he's been up at night working, okay, don't worry about him. The Eloi, but if it doesn't fit any of these descriptions, Ganvahu, the top say. He's the guy you're looking for. Okay. So the government heard about Elizabeth Shimon's, you know, his idea or the way he caught thieves, and they said, you know what, you're our man. Okay. Now, Asura Rezreb Shimon, the Katav Eskandi. All right, well, now Rezreb Shimon started catching thieves. Shalach Rebbe Yeshua ben Karcha. So Yeshua ben Karcha sent him a message. Chaymetz ben Yayin, vinegar son of wine. His father was Rebbe Shimon ben Yochai, great tzaddik. His son Elazar now is a cop, putting Jews away. So he called him Chaymetz ben Yayin. Chaymetz is vinegar, sour wine. Sour grapes, vinegar, son of wine. That was not a compliment. How long are you going to keep giving people over to their death? How long should you give over the nation of our God to death? Sholach Lei, he sent him back a message. I'm just removing the thorns from the vineyard. These are not good people. We're not talking about good people here. So I'm getting rid of this, of the bad apples. Shalach Lei, he sent him a message. Yavai Bala Kerem V'yachales Kaitzev. That the owner of the vineyard come and let him take out the thorns. And his example is, he said, I'm taking out the thorns from the vineyard. So Rabbi Shua ben Karcha said, let the owner of the vineyard take care of that. Let him take care of that himself. That's not for you to do. And this is actually the Rambam Paskins this way. This is really, you know, it's hard to understand exactly where Rabbi Shimon is coming from. But basically, this is the Gemara that says you can't be an informant. You can't hand over a Jew to the non-Jewish government because it's for them to punish him. Or to punish him in any way, monetarily, physically. Okay. But this is Ramesh is taking out of this Gemara that we're not administering capital punishment because we've got to get rid of the bad guys. Because if we let the bad guys continue their ways, you know, society can't exist. That's not our problem. That's not our business. Like the Gemara says, Yavei Baal HaKerem, V'yachal HaKaitzev, the owner of the vineyard, the Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of that. That's not our business. So therefore, it's not that we're administering capital punishment either because we hate these people or because of the fact that we've got to get rid of them or else we won't be able to exist. Elohu sheyedu ha'inshi chomer ha'isurim elu le'yavru alza. But it's rather for people to realize the severity of these prohibitions, and they will not do so. If he doesn't even call it a deterrent in the sense of, well, if people know they're going to get punished, right, they won't do it. I mean, it is a kind of deterrent. But he's not saying the deterrent is, well, if I know if I do this and I get caught, I'm going to get punished real bad. It's rather a way of letting the people know the severity of these prohibitions. When people, for some reason, have a temptation to do these things, for whatever reason it may be, we let them know that you could be put to death for this. And by knowing that they can be put to death for this, that is what will stop them. And again, as he says before, any sin that a person with any of these things that have capital punishment, if a person were to commit them, the reason why we're educating them in this manner, the reason why we're educating these sins in this manner, that if you do them, you could be killed, is because, again, if a person gives into his temptation and transgresses any one of these sins, then again, he's crossed over the line into a state of which he could do anything to satisfy himself. And therefore, this person who has a intention to do this needs to be educated and be told, you could be killed for this. And by doing that, that's what the Torah educates a person to realize how severe and how serious this is. You know, we know that there are, you know, cultures where killing and murder is, you know, almost passé. You know, so the point is, the Torah has to go ahead and the Torah has to make sure by murder, by illicit relationships, by a number of things, one has to realize the severity of it. For what purpose? In order not to do it. It's educational.
You think that applies to today?
In what sense?
Because
Well, let's wait and see how he goes through the rest of this. Because now he's really going to talk about, basically, as he says, Mitzad Hasheni. Now, from the other side, Yesh Hadgasha Al Hashivus Shel Kol Nefesh. There is a tremendous value given to any soul, no matter whose soul it is, even the soul of a criminal. V'Oyr Cheshbonos V'Lachein Nitzavinu Shel Adon Dinu Nefashos. So now he basically goes through a number of the laws that relate to capital punishment that show how much value we give to a human life, no matter whose life it is. Number one, the only kind of rabbinical court that can adjudicate capital punishment is one that is ordained for that. You have to be ordained to be able to administer capital punishment. And the only ones that are ordained to do so are those who are greatest in Torah knowledge, the Gam Gedolim B'Shar Chachmas, and they're also great. They're also very knowledgeable in other forms of wisdom. Doesn't explain why, but he says these people have to be extremely well-rounded, and it may be they have to be extremely well-rounded because, again, the process of adjudicating a murder and all the different investigations and questions that need to be asked, the people who ask them have to be very well, very, very knowledgeable in everything. In many of, besides for the laws of the Torah, in some very practical, technical things, they have to be knowledgeable in these things to be able to ask the right questions to figure out what went on. They have to be extremely humble. Very God-fearing. They hate money. There's no question of any kind of question of any kind of monetary influence here. They love, they're lovers of truth. And people love them. People hold them in very high esteem because they are people of such great character. The nefesh shefela and humble. The chavras and teva, and dealing with them is pleasant. The diburim asen benachas and abriyes, and the way they speak and interact is with in a gentle manner with people. There should be nothing ill about them, no ill description about them. Rachmanim b'yaser, and extremely merciful. Umitamz, and for this reason, ein ma'amidin zarkein muflik b'shanim shekvar nishkach menu k'tzatz ha'gidol banim. You do not appoint to this court someone who is very old, because someone who is very old has already become somewhat detached from what it means to raise children. Or perhaps someone who doesn't have children. You know, Children create a certain level of mercy within a person. And without that experience, you're now becoming too detached from that experience, you are going to possibly be lacking mercy. And it's possible you get angry at these sinners more than necessary. Okay, so this is the criteria. You want to be a judge to administer capital punishment? This is what you have to be. You have to be a tremendous Torah scholar. You have to be extremely well-rounded in all facets of the world. And you have to be extremely of the highest character, extremely humble, extremely merciful. Not only that, Vanashim Kadalim Vitaivim Elu, and even these great and special people, Ainu Chayim Ladun, Alekshem Eshim Mishleisha Sanhedrin. It can only be a Sanhedrin of 23, which is one step down from the highest level of 72. Ulevad Zet Shrichin Lohayshav Lefneim, and besides for that, when these 23 judges are adjudicating the capital punishment, you have sitting in front of them Shloisha Shurais Kedoylem Batere Mo'ed, three rows of great scholars, Achshadayim Lohigilu Madrigas HaSanhedrin. They're not yet at the level that they can sit on the Sanhedrin, meaning on this 23 judge court. Aval Krayv Lohem Shohu Shmira Gedoylem, but they're close to that level. This becomes a tremendous precautionary measure to make sure that the judges that are judging don't mistakenly judge him to be guilty. Meaning, you got three rows of Torah scholars that are going to be there watching to make sure that they didn't make a mistake. And a mistake to guilt. Okay. Dok Shahid Nidme Lagimel Ashura Shemazakim Betoyas. Now let's say what happens is these scholars on these three rows, they say to themselves, he shouldn't be innocent. Now they, in their minds, they're making a mistake in declaring his innocence. Mishatkin, I say, Mishamin Carlos Tavara, but one of those scholars pipe up and they say, no, he shouldn't be guilty. Send them out. Mm-mm. You can get up and speak out against if you feel that they are finding them guilty. And you won't feel that way, but you can't do it if they're saying not guilty. You also cannot administer capital punishment even with the greatest proof in the world. Even with the greatest circumstantial evidence that you may have, it's not enough to kill someone. It can only be done with two kosher witnesses, Shadim Bachlal Megim Adava, that have no connection with this whatsoever. Ubetach, now here he takes a jab at the courts of law. Ubetach loya yedei edim, and certainly not through witnesses, Shemavticham lepaikrim le'oinish, that they get promised to be exempted from punishment in the Yidol Acherim if they testify against other people. That for sure doesn't work. To go ahead and to administer capital punishment based on the testimony of a witness who's only testifying so that he can get out of his own punishment, that's for sure not. That happens all the time now. Yeah. That's Ramesh's jab at that kind of contemporary adjudication. Okay. And the witnesses, who are again, witnesses according to halacha, as trustworthy and kosher witnesses, all this happens after we warn those witnesses the seriousness of the prohibition of testifying falsely, v'chaymer tzichas nefesh, and certainly causing someone to be killed, v'yim gadol b'yaser. I mean, these witnesses are given a very, very serious warning. And the whole atmosphere is one of tremendous seriousness about the testimony they're giving. The gamtzara hasra, the kabbalah hasra. Not only that, there has to be a warning. It has to be that the person, the sinner who was warned, accepted the warning. The gam shayyimah beferish, and that the person who is about to commit this crime says explicitly, shav shayyadeh kozeh who either. These witnesses say to him, you know what's going to, this is forbidden, you know what's going to happen to you. And what does the guy say? He says, I don't care. I'm doing it anyway. Okay? So therefore, these are all the things that you need. Right? You need a certain kind of, you need a court, you've got the people who are watching the judges, you've got to have the kosher witnesses, you've got the witnesses who are warned about the severity of testifying falsely. You've got the warning, and the person committing the crime, who even after being warned, says, I don't care, I'm still going to do it. And because of all this, the amount of the possibility, the probability of actually administering a capital punishment, it only happened once every couple of years. Okay? The Gemara in Makkah says, that there's a certain type of bezdin that's called a bezdin chayvlanis. This is in Makkis. Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay, Sanhedrin Harileges, a Sanhedrin, a court that administers capital punishment. Echad b'shavua, once in, doesn't mean once a week, means once in 7 years. Okay, the nikris chayvlanis. That's called chayvlanis. Chava means a damaging. That's called a bezdin. That's a damaging bezdin. This is a bezdin that's too much. Once in 7 years. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said echel l'shivim shana. If it happens once in 70 years, they're called chayvlanis. Then Rabbi Tarfon Rikiva said, ilu hayinu b'Sanhedrin, would we have been on a Sanhedrin that administers capital punishment, or never have adam me'olam, no one ever would have gotten killed. The Gemara explains that the kinds of questions that you would have asked the witnesses, they would have asked them highly improbable, but technically possible explanations to what they saw. And basically, if they can't say no to those things, then they're not testifying properly. On that, Rav Shimon Gamliel said, "Avhein ma ben shev chedam be Yisrael." If that's how judges would work, like Rabbi Kim Rabbi Tarfin, that would have increased murders amongst the Jewish people. That was a way of saying that there's as much as we do ask, and we ask very serious questions and very detailed questions, to go as far as Rabbi Kim Rabbi Tarfin, that far we wouldn't go. But do you see clearly that the Gemara, that the possibility, or that the possibility of actually administering capital punishment should happen extremely infrequent. Okay. V'gam lo evsher lodon din nefashas elok shebeis hamikdash hayakayim. You could only administer capital punishment when the Beis Hamikdash was existing. V'yashvu Sanhedrin shel ayin aleph sheim oid yoyseh gedolim lishkas agos Beis Hamikdash. And the highest Sanhedrin, the highest scholars, actually were sitting in their place in the area of the Beis Hamikdash. Shalachain, and because of that, meaning because we have to have a Beis Hamikdash in order to administer capital punishment, Laidonu din in the fashis, ap in medina shayirishus mehamalchus shayaduna ayudim lach medina tayra. There were countries where the local government would allow Jews to judge their communities according to the laws of the Torah. But you don't find that then that they administered capital punishment following the rules of the Torah. Why? Because without being in the Eretz Yisrael at the Beis HaMikdash, which has an Hedron Gedol in its place, he can't do it. And the facts are, he says, you don't find for all generations too many Jewish murderers. Until you came to the Bugsy Siegel and those kinds of guys. And it's not Neima, why do we find so few Jewish murderers? My Lansky. The issue of why you don't find so many Jewish murderers is not because of the fact they were afraid of the punishment. That's not what it was. It was because they were trained, because they lived by a life of Torah. The Torah talked about capital punishment for such a thing of murder, so people understood how serious it was. Okay. I shouldn't, even with Bugsy Siegel, Maya Lansky, again, well, I don't know how many. He just hired other people to do it.
Well, it's not
Murder right. Incorporated, no?
Well.
Okay, well, it's not important right now.
This
was written. Tavshin Mem Aleph. if we're now in Ayin Dalet, we're now in 74, and this is 41, about 30-something years ago. Okay. So basically, what was the Moshe's response to this government official? You want to know what the Torah's grand capital punishment is? It's about education. It's about educating people to the severity of these types of sins. And at the same time, and alongside that, right, meaning the goal is not killing. The goal is not actually to administer the punishment. The goal is to educate people to know, stay away from these things. And if it ever comes to the point where, and even to actually come to the point of administering the capital punishment, you see how much value is put onto any life. Meaning, the argument that this person treated life cheap doesn't mean that we have to treat that person's life cheap. And the we treat it now without full value. The means by which we adjudicate the greatest scholars and all the details that he said. So clearly, the point of capital punishment is not to actually administer it; it's meant to educate. And if we even have to come to the point of having to judge such a thing, we judge with the greatest severity because of the value of any human life. Now we add something very interesting. This is only when the prohibition of murder has not become hufkar, has not become cheap. Is a type of rather because of some kind of great desire, or aza meriva, or some kind of a quarrel, al tainas mammon v'kaved asaze, that the person committed, let's say, this murder for some kind of strong desire. I don't know what that would refer to, or because of some kind of quarrel over money, over honor. You know, this is what causes people to kill each other. But someone who is murdering because murder means nothing to him, and he's extremely cruel. Meaning, again, the chenkzin is rabu reitzchem v'oisei risha hayudonin lemigdar nilsa lemeyamaiser etzicha shuatzolat hamedina. If there did come to a certain point where murder was getting out of hand, meaning it's not like it happened once in a while because somebody, you know, lost his temper, there's some kind of fight, for whatever reason it may be, anger. But the point is, you've got someone that is extremely cruel, and by him, murder means nothing. When that happens, then already they would judge to punish the murderer actually for the benefit of society. Somebody who is walking around and murdering people with the attitude that murder means nothing, that human life means nothing, in those situations, they, people have the power to do so, would at that point actually administer some kind of capital punishment on such a person. Just 1 second. Right. Right. So he's saying someone who, again, kills because money means nothing to him, and so too when murderers began increasing in general, so then are you done? And then they would judge to administer capital punishment to protect society from such people. Which I guess that would mean, you know, if there were people, I'm assuming, you know, most people who murder, like, you know, organized crime, they've got some kind of reason why they're doing it. But again, when they're doing it without any kind of remorse, when they're just doing it because life is cheap, then already when there was the power to be able to create a precautionary measure to protect society from these people, then they would possibly administer capital punishment. So coming from the actual law of capital punishment, which could happen for anyone who commits murder intentionally, that's something that, again, we see the Torah is very careful about that. It's all about education, and we value any human life, even the life of a criminal. At the same time, coming from another angle, if we have someone that is a menace to society because murder means nothing to him, human life means absolutely nothing to him, then they would actually put such a person to death for the protection of people.
I just people can Maimonides, in fact, I think by worship of him, it's quite a lot of what Maimonides does in his writings. But one of the things that I just read was that in cases where you need to protect societies when certain crime becomes sort of almost routine,
right,
they are allowed much more than you just said, that they are allowed to judge people, to give people death, even if the law does not work.
Okay, I was just about to read that.
Okay.
Okay? Now, to continue on this idea that Rabbi Meisher says about the fact that in order to protect society when either one person or a number of people are considering murder as no big deal, as nothing that severe, and therefore to protect society they would administer even capital punishment, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Vav Min Aleph. The Gemara says like this: Tani Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Shamati, I heard, meaning from my teachers, Shebezdin Makin Ve'Onshin, Bezdin will makin, means Bezdin will give lashes, corporal punishment, and will punish the ancient of punishment, meaning capital punishment, shalom min ha-Torah, even not for something that the Torah said you get such punishments for. V'lo lavo divrei Torah, the intention is not to go against the Torah, elo kedei la'asei syog la'Torah, but to make a fence around the Torah.
Exactly.
When we find that there are certain situations where somebody does something, and we have, and we feel that to protect, to make sure that this doesn't get out of hand, in order to protect the Torah, we may have to administer a punishment that the Torah never, according to other of the law, would have given. We can do so. Two examples: Umaisa be'echad sharakav al sus b'shabbos b'imei yavonim. During the times of the Greeks, there was a person riding a horse on Shabbos. Why can't you ride on a horse on Shabbos? Torah never says you can't ride on a horse on Shabbos. There is no Torah prohibition riding on a horse on Shabbos. It's a rabbinic decree. We're afraid as you're riding the horse and you want to take some kind of a, you may pull off a branch from a tree in order to, you know, in order to hit the horse and keep the horse in line. And if you pull off from a tree, that's a Torah prohibition. But it's all, but you cannot ride a horse, precautionary measure, rabbinic law. For the Uber Bezdin, they brought him to Bezdin, the Sakluhu. They stoned him. They put him to death. Not because he was worthy of that punishment, not because the sin itself was a sin that deserves that kind of punishment. It was necessary for the time. It was a time of the Greeks. It was a time of religious persecution. They were going against the Torah, and now you go riding a horse in public. You know what that does? You know what that could do to people under such circumstances? That was a situation to protect the Torah, meaning to make sure other people don't follow that person's example, that they put him to death. That's worth an example. Shuv ma'isa ba'adam, echad, shetiach es ishto tachas ha'te'ena. The other story is a man who was intimate with his wife under a tree. Public. Okay? He was intimate in public. V'viyu le'bezdin, they brought him to Bezdin, v'helku. He didn't get killed. They gave him lashes. Not because when a person does that, that is an act worthy of the Torah punishment of lashes, because it's not. Again, the times demanded it. If such a thing, people would hear a guy did that and he get away with it, that could now cause lots of problems. And therefore, they punished. So the Gemara says that basically, in order for that, there are times where a bezin, a rabbinic court, will have the power to administer a punishment that the Torah wouldn't even give, in order to create offense as precautionary measures to protect the keeping of the Torah. And if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the section of Chayshim Mishpat, in the second chapter is about this: that a bezin has, that a court of law, or even community leaders, have the ability to administer punishments that the Torah never was given for the sake of protecting the Torah, or as Moshe said, protecting people. So this is a practical halacha. Now again, to be able to be, you can't, it's not anybody that can do that. You have to be very clear, they have to be very great scholars, there's a lot of conditions necessary for that. You can't just, you know, three of us sit down and make some of Bezdin and we do those things. It's not going to work that way. can only be done by the greatest people, or people who actually have the proper authority to do that. But in the sense of practical halacha, is it possible to carry that out even nowadays? Yes. You don't need to be in Eretz Yisrael. You don't need a Beis HaMikdash in order to be able to carry out even capital punishment for that purpose. So at the same time that we have the terrorist capital punishment that cannot be administered unless it's in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash and the Sanhedrin being present in the Beis HaMikdash, the actual capital punishment of the Torah needs all that, but punishment for the purpose of either protecting society, as Moshe says, or for protecting the Torah, that could actually be done anywhere, even not in Eretz Yisrael, even without the Beis HaMikdash.
But only in places where Jews are allowed to...
It has to be a situation where they have the power to do so. And a lot of it has to do with the power of the community. You know, we don't have the kind of community set up that they had hundreds of years ago, where you literally had city elders who really, you know, had power in the city. You know, how the halacha gives them certain powers, powers of taxation, different powers. They really had these powers. The Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch says that in order to administer these kind of punishments, according to one opinion, you need Gadol Hadar. That means he's going to have a rabbinical court with him, but a person on that court has to be Gadol Hadar, has to be on that kind of level. But the point is, though, so it's really so interesting, like you've got all the precautionary, all the difficulty of administering the terrorist punishment for capital punishment, which is, again, as Moshe says, it's really meant to be educational, but then you've got the other way, right? Which again, you have to have special people to do it, but when it comes to that precautionary measure, in order to again protect the Torah or to protect people, because you literally have to protect people, or you realize that the times necessitate such kinds of severe punishments because we need that to protect the keeping of the Torah, that already becomes, that's not as difficult. It's very interesting. It could, but it doesn't.
Like, I could think, you know, in a concentration camp, if somebody, you know, if there were elders in the camp, and they asked the elders if somebody did something terrible.
I'm not aware of anything like that, because again, the Shulchan Aruch says you have to have Gadol Hadar, or again, you have to have the people who actually have the power, the authority over a community to do so. But it's just very interesting, like the two different angles. Okay.
But Rabbi Moshe didn't mention that, what he would just.
So. No, he doesn't bring in this Gemara. I'm not sure why he doesn't. Yeah. I'm not sure why he doesn't, but he doesn't. Okay. I want to share with you now. A thought from the Be'er Yosef, again on this section of the parasha, but going back to the part of the parasha that deals with someone who kills unintentionally and how that person has to be exiled to the cities of refuge. So the Torah itself says, you know, if the conditions are met that you kill the person unintentionally in a way that you have to go through the cities of refuge, you may not leave those cities until the Kohen Gadol dies. Only once the Kohen Gadol dies, that is when you can go out. So the Mishnah in Maseches Makkah says, now because of this, because of the fact that these people only went free when the Kohen Gadol died, that the mothers of the Kohen Gadol used to come and bring them food and clothing, okay, so that these people should not die. That their sons should die. Okay? So they brought them chocolate chip cookies and knitted sweaters and things like that in order for the purpose of preventing them from davening that their sons should die. Okay? So the Gemara asks, well, that sounds like that if these people would pray that the Kohen Gadol should die, it could work. What did Kohen Gadol do wrong? Just somebody goes at it, to say that someone could pray for the Kohen Gadol to die so that he could get out for what he did wrong. You know, what did the Kohen Gadol do? What did the Kohen Gadol do wrong that such prayer should be accepted? So the Gemara answers, because the Kohen Gadol, if this happened under the watch of the Kohen Gadol, that means the Kohen Gadol didn't daven well enough that such a thing should never happen. The Kohen Gadol has the power through his prayers to prevent such occurrence from even happening. Again, it happened unintentionally. But the Kohen Gadol has the power in his prayers, he has the power to prevent such a thing from happening. If it did happen, it means he didn't daven enough, he didn't daven properly. Therefore, he has a certain amount of responsibility for it happened, and therefore they could daven that he should die.
But that means that his mother wasn't sure that he is properly davening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, she wants to take a chance, hey. You know, she's going to want to take a chance. Okay. So the Gemara really asks, when the Gemara asks the question, what the Kohen Gadol do wrong, the Gemara quotes a pasuk that says that the point of the pasuk is that a curse in vain, meaning cursing someone when they don't deserve it, doesn't do anything. So the Gemara is saying, if so, how could their prayers work? The answer is no, it's not in vain. They bear some responsibility. The Talmud Yerushalmi, when it deals with this question, basically answers, well, there's a difference between a curse and a prayer. Cursing someone when he doesn't deserve it doesn't work. Prayer? It's different. So whether you use the Gemara's answer that he is responsible, whether you use Yerushalmi's answer, at the end of the day, you're talking about people praying that someone else should die. That's not very nice. That really doesn't seem to be the appropriate thing to daven for. Even if the person has a certain level of responsibility here, it just doesn't seem that it's appropriate to do such a thing. And the answer is, that's the power of davening. If you daven sincerely, if you offer a sincere prayer, even if it's inappropriate, it could work. I don't really, I've never fully understood this, but that's what's coming out here. Even if you learn, like the Gemara that says that the Kohen Gadol bears some responsibility, therefore the prayers could work. But again, it's a prayer that someone should die. And the main problem is you were negligent, or you bear the reason why you're in the Eir Mikvah, the reason why you have to find refuge is again because you may not have been intentional, right? But there's a certain level of negligence in what you did. You need atonement for what you did. Okay, the Kohen Gadol could have prevented it with his prayer. But to daven that he should die, so you should get out, it's so selfish. But it's possible that a sincere prayer can work. Now, if so, a sincere prayer can work. So let's try to understand something. All right? So the Kohen Gadol's mother comes and she brings her chocolate chip cookies and her socks and all the different things for them, right? Now, so they're going to stop davening the Kohen Gadol? They're going to stop davening because of that? The Kohen Gadol shouldn't die? You know? Forget the socks and forget the cookies. I want to get out of here. I want to go back to my home. What does it help? Maybe it doesn't help. But the answer is, again, for such a prayer to work, right, it needs a sincere prayer. It needs concentration. It needs feeling. It has to really be a heartfelt prayer. Okay? But if in the back of their mind, right, they remember what kind of nice lady she is, the prayer will be missing a certain amount of intensity, a certain amount of seriousness. She's a nice lady. This will diminish the intensity of the prayer that it wouldn't work. Because again, prayer works, davening works, tefillah works based on how much heart we put into it. And the Lord is telling us that if your heart, even into something that would seemingly be inappropriate, it could still work. Okay, but it's got to be heartfelt. Your heart's got to be in it. The intensity, the fervor, the feeling has to be there. If it's somewhat diminished, that's enough to cancel out its power. And therefore, because of the fact that the Kohen Gadol's death is what freed these people, and they would daven that the Kohen Gadol should die, the Kohen Gadol's mother would bring them gifts so that would decrease the intensity, the feeling of their prayer, and therefore the prayer would work.